You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 28 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at Wayne Rooney's heroics in the San Siro as the Reds brushed Milan aside. Red Cafe member Tumbling Dice makes an appearance on the CAF countdown and will preview the forthcoming games against Everton and West Ham.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 28 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, but I'm not joined by Dan and Dov this week. It's just Dan, as Dov is away on holiday in Hong Kong. Dan, how are you this week?
I'm fine, Steve, thanks. I'm not doing too badly. Just been playing five-a-side football, got myself a booking, needless. But I've been watching too much of Wayne Rooney, haven't I? So, you know, you learn off these players. And as, you know, not having Dov here tonight, I'm sure we'll be fine. We'll crack on without him.
Absolutely. Well, Dan, we'll kick off with the Milan victory in the San Siro in the Champions League on Tuesday evening. And what better place to start than Wayne Rooney? I mean, a few weeks back you were saying not in your top five strikers in the world, still needed to add the sort of finishing end product to his game, but he certainly added that now, hasn't he?
Yeah, I did say that a few weeks ago, and I also said that, you know, if he proves it away in Milan, then I will come round to your viewpoint on Wayne Rooney. And he was fantastic last night. For that 20-minute period in the second half, I thought he absolutely destroyed Nesta and Silva at the back. I thought he was pretty outstanding, really. I mean, first half, his performance matched the rest of United's, really. We looked a little bit slow, weren't getting into the game. A few passes going astray. But, I mean, you know, overall, you can't complain at a 3-2 win away at the San Siro. It'll be interesting to see how Seedorf's goal has impacted on the tie, you know, as a whole. But I think that we rolled our luck a little bit. A few chances in the first half for Milan, especially to Huntelaar when he was one-on-one with Van der Sar. You know, if they took, you know, that away, it's 2-0 and it's, you know, it looks ominous for us, really. What did you think about David Beckham's performance anyway, Steve? I know he didn't really do much in the game. Obviously, the Ronaldinho goal was aided by Beckham's free kick, but I didn't think it was an integral part of it. I thought it was a pretty poor free kick, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he was quiet, wasn't he? As Beckham does these days, did the simple thing really well. Not really involved too much in any attacking play, though, was he? Like you say, the free kick, Evra pretty poorly dealt with it, didn't he? And that sort of made the chance out of that. If he'd have just got that way, then we wouldn't have been talking about it. But yeah, he did okay. I think Milan are a bit overrated, in fairness. I don't think they're... I mean, the centre-back partnership, Nesta and Thiago Silva, I mean, people in Italy were suggesting that these two are arguably the best sort of centre-back partnership in the world. And on evidence of the other night, I just couldn't see that at all. I didn't think they were...
I thought that Silva had a decent game. I thought Nesta looked a little bit rusty. I know Dov's not here to defend himself, but he was saying last week how Nesta was, you know, his experience would possibly tame Wayne Rooney. Didn't really happen once we got Rooney into the game a little bit more in the second half. But I think it's Milan's midfield where I thought they struggled against us last night.
If you remember back to sort of like, was it 2007 when we got beat by them in the semi-final?
Yeah.
He ran the show, didn't he? And he rang rings around Fletcher at the time. And going back to the other night, Fletcher was just superb, wasn't he? It was pretty much roles reversed, wasn't it? Fletcher was dominating everywhere, set up two goals, and he just didn't give Pirlo any time to sort of relax on the ball. Because if you give Pirlo time, he'll rip you apart, won't he? But we just didn't give him time to settle.
I mean, I was surprised at where Park played. He didn't really play. He didn't play wide, did he? He kind of like played, behind Rooney, really. More centrally, which I thought was weird, and I read a few reports today. I didn't think about it at the time, but you know, that might have been to mark Pirlo out of the game, because obviously, like you just said, if you give Pirlo a bit of time on the ball, he can do what, you know, Scholes does for us and just dictate play, you know, pull the passes. And I thought it worked really well. Nani was a disappointment again. I don't know why. I mean, I thought he did okay, but I mean, there was a few vital times in the first half where he could have, you know, put a decent cross in, and he either overhit it or he went near post.
Just going back to Rooney, I mean, in terms of, you mentioned you think he's in your top five strikers now, but what about on current form? He's surely up there is one of the best players in the world now. Maybe Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo on his day is just unstoppable. But at the moment, current form, he's up there, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's scoring goals, and we've always said, me included, you know, when he starts scoring goals consistently, that's when he'll be considered to be world class, or at least, you know, like you say, in the top five. He's adding goals to his game now. I mean, he's got 25 this season already, which is pretty decent. I wouldn't bet against him getting 35, 40, maybe. Obviously, depending on how far we go in the competitions. His overall game's improved dramatically, really. His link-up play. I mean, even for his second goal yesterday, the way he brought the ball down and headed it to Fletcher was, you know, brilliant centre-forward play. And obviously the finish as well.
And I think the way he plays the sort of lone front man, a few years ago I wouldn't have said that Rooney would have had a chance in hell of being able to play that role really well and sort of hold the ball up, bring others into play. He would normally just drift away, wouldn't he? Go out to the wing, usually the left wing, and sort of try and influence play there. But he seems to be sticking right on that last defender, and I thought he played it really, really well. And it doesn't say a lot for Dimitar Berbatov, does he? Because he was sort of brought to the club with that sort of role in mind, wasn't he? The holding sort of target man, front man. And he just can't get a look in him in the sort of form Rooney is at the moment.
No, but I'm sure, you know, Berbatov understands that Ferguson can't drop Rooney at the moment because he's, like you say, he's playing so well. You know, I'm a massive fan of Berbatov, and, you know, I think his time will definitely come at United. I mean, we've still got half a season to go, you know. There'll be big games, there'll be games where he'll step up, and I'm sure he'll score some important goals for us. It's just a matter of giving him games now. Otherwise, he will start to get a little bit annoyed that he's not featuring as much. I heard you mention Valencia before. I thought he was phenomenal when he came on. It was so obvious what he was going to do. He was just, you know, every time he was just going to go at the left back. But I mean, the funny thing is that left back. He knows that he's going to go that way. But it's a matter of when he's going to actually, you know, knock it past him and sprint. Which means it's a great weapon to have. It's just pace and the cross for the for Rooney's first goal was brilliant, really, just after coming on.
Bit shaky at the back, weren't we? It's got to be said. Johnny Evans and Raphael in particular sort of switched off at the end, but take nothing away from Ronaldinho and Seedorf, because it was a really well-worked goal, wasn't it? But switched off a bit, didn't we? And just throughout the game, really, bit shaky, but then you're in the San Siro, high-pressure atmosphere, massive game. You're bound to make a couple of mistakes, I suppose.
Well, Raphael, he just showed a bit of an experience, really. I mean, we're 3-1 up, and he had the ball at right back, didn't he? He could have done anything with it apart from what he did. Took it inside and lost it in midfield, and obviously there was a massive gap then. And the one person on the pitch you probably didn't want it to fall to was Ronaldinho. But nobody tracked Seedorf's run into the box. Quality finish, though, you can't knock that. But I thought Johnny Evans had one of his poorest games for United, I think. Overall, he's done brilliantly. He's done fantastic for us, really. But I think the occasion might have just got to him a little bit. Like you say, the atmosphere. But I'm sure, he'll bounce back. Won't be a problem. He's a quality player, and he's only young as well. So the future looks bright. I thought Ferdinand played fairly well, seeing as it's only his, like, you know, is it his third game in a few? Obviously, he's been suspended in the Premier League games. So I thought he did okay. Generally, I mean, it was a decent performance. A bit sloppy, like we said, in the first half. But, you know, you can't knock it 3 away goals. We should really be favourites to go through to the next round now.
Well, that'll be my next question, Dan. I mean, just looking ahead, they've scored that second goal. But we, like you say, we've got the 3 away goals. We should be full of confidence. But have to make sure, won't we, Old Trafford? Can't be complacent at all. And I'd still go out there and look to get the win. I don't think you want to sit back against a team like Milan. I think should go, not held to leather, but really sort of put the foot on the accelerator and try and take the game to them.
Yeah, in a funny way, though, that second goal could have helped us a little bit mentally. If we took a 3-1 lead into the game, we might think we're already there, sort of thing. But now it's only one goal difference, which means we have to, like you say, take the game to Milan now to make it certain. Which it'll be a fantastic game at Old Trafford. The atmosphere will be buzzing like it always is on European nights, and I can only see United win, really. Or I can't see us, you know, going out of the competition anyway. Which is great, really. I mean, knocking AC Milan out, if we did that, you know, it's a massive boost for us, because, you know, they're a quality team.
Right then, well, before we move on to the CAF countdown, Dan, we'll have a quick look at the Aston Villa game in the Premier League last Wednesday, the 1-0 draw. Seems an age ago now, doesn't it? Well, Nani sending off. 1-0 draw away to Villa after that. It doesn't look a bad result, does it, really?
No, but I thought, well, I didn't see the game. I was, I had a bit of a traumatic experience in Scotland, but we'll leave that. I think that we played fairly well from what I've seen. Nani, I'm not sure if it's a red card, you know. I don't know what you think of it, but I think that, I know he kind of jumped into a tackle, but he clearly got the ball. He didn't, I don't think he touched Petrov. Petrov made a meal of it, but, you know, I suppose you can't make them sort of challenges in the Premier League these days. But, I mean, I thought it was possibly a yellow card at the most. But I mean, generally, I thought we played quite well. Obviously, a bit fortunate with the own goal. You know, the tenth own goal of the season. I'm sure if Dov was here, he'd mark out that, you know, own goals have scored more goals than Berbatov, which I'm quite glad he's not here to rub that in. But I mean, you make your own luck, don't you? If Ryan Giggs doesn't flash that ball across the box, he puts it over the bar or something, you're not going to get an own goal, are you? You know, you concentrate on getting a delivery, which is what we've done in the past, especially against Portsmouth. You know, the goal against Portsmouth where the lads slid it into the top corner, I mean, that was a great cross. So you know, I thought that we played well. Villa didn't really show much ambition, obviously, once we'd gone down to 10 men, which was a shame, really, because they could have probably come at us a bit more. But overall, a point's a decent result. Obviously, with Chelsea losing at Goodison Park as well, that made it a bit more interesting. And I think it's going to be a great race to the end of the season now.
Just going back to Nani ever so quickly. I mean, I'm sort of with you in the fact that I don't think he intended to injure Petrov. But do you not think it was stupid jumping in like that? Why has he done that? I mean, he's in the form, really good form this season. The game against Arsenal, he was just absolutely superb, wasn't he? And he's getting a run in the team now. And then he goes and jumps into a tackle like that. Surely you know that you just can't take your foot off the ground like you did. If he goes in and slides in normally, he wins the ball and we can carry on and get on with it. But it's just, I don't know what's gone through his head to jump into a tackle like that.
Well, again, he's young, isn't he? And I think that he'll obviously learn from that. But I think he was a bit annoyed that something else happened earlier in the game, and I think he just lost his rag, really. But like you say, a bit stupid, really. Similar to, you know, Carrick last night against Milan. You know, why he's flicked that ball away, I don't know. People are saying it was a harsh red card, but Carrick, you know, he knew exactly what he was doing, and in my opinion, he deserved it. You know, he knows he's going to get a second yellow for that. But no, Nani's done all right, but, you know, there's not too much to write home about at the moment. He's got to do it consistently, you know, over a long period of time. But I mean, I'm sure he'll play better than what he did against Milan, and he'll learn from his sending off against Villa. It's just unfortunate. It might give Valencia another chance to, you know, get a few starts now, because he's been left out of the starting lineup a few times, hasn't he?
Amazing to think that we're talking about Valencia needing to get a chance. You know, he's been brilliant, hasn't he?
I think he's been probably one of our best players of the season, alongside, obviously, Rooney and Evra. You know, Valencia's been the most consistent. He's not really had a bad game. I can't remember a terrible game that he's had. And he makes an impact when he comes off the bench as well. So I think he's been fantastic, really. His first season as well, you know, filling Ronaldo's boots. He's done brilliantly.
What about Anderson, Dan? Left out the last couple of games, hasn't he? And we got an email from James McAllister, and he just sort of wants to know our opinion on exactly what's going on with Anderson. I mean, Ferguson's, well, supposedly it could be a sort of disciplinary thing that he's leaving him out because of the rumours that come out about him being absent without leave in Brazil when he shouldn't have been. What do you make of it all? Do you think Ferguson's sort of leaving him out to sort of say you can't go doing that sort of thing to me?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. If Anderson had to go back to Brazil, why didn't he just tell the club? I don't get that. I don't understand why he wouldn't tell the club where you're going. You know, it's not like he's going to France or something. He's going, you know, to Brazil. You know, it's quite a way away. And someone will know you're missing, I guess. But I think that, with Carrick getting sent off last night, it could give Anderson a way back into the team, because I think, you know, Fergie still play three central midfielders in that second leg. And there's obviously a space up for grabs there. So, you know, you never know. But maybe it's kick up the backside that Anderson needed, because he's not been brilliant this season, let's be honest. And he's got so much potential and ability, but he just doesn't seem to fit into the way we play yet, which might be a bit of a problem for him.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, it's time for CAF Countdown, and tonight we are joined by RedCafe.net member Tumbling Dice. How are you, and what's your real name?
Hello there, real name's Phil.
Phil. Oh, hi, Phil. Well,
how are you doing?
Why Tumbling Dice? It's a bit of a... It's an odd name to
use. It's a Rolling Stones song. It's an old Rolling Stones song, and quite liked it, and just thought it was a bit catchy, so... Yeah. A lot of people go for United linked names, and I just fancied something a bit different, so...
Fair play. You don't sound very Irish, if you don't mind me saying.
No, I'm not. No, I'm just I'm from the Pennines, just outside Manchester.
All right. Now, what brings you to Ireland?
Up on Phil's. I've been over here about 15 years now.
All right.
I came over for work. I got made redundant over in England, had a few grand to spend, and came over on holiday and ended up staying here, so... I've got missus and a kid over here now, so things are okay.
Well, great stuff. Anyway, fantastic result last night, obviously. Three away goals.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, do you think we'll get through to the next round now already, or do you think it could still be a bit...
I'm a pessimist, but I'd say anything can happen, you know. I don't think we're definitely through. I think that last goal will have given them a little bit more of a chance. But we're certainly in the driving seat. We're certainly going to... I think we're favourites to go through, but anything can happen. And, you know, I've seen enough of football to know that... You know, there was one between Deportivo and I think it was AC Milan a couple of years ago, and one side were ahead, I think 4-1 after the first leg, and they still ended up going out. So, yeah, hopefully we've done enough.
Yeah, right. What did you think about Johnny Evans' performance? I thought it was pretty poor, to be honest with you. He seemed a bit out of it.
Yes, I've seen better from him. I think he's a cracking young player, so still got a lot of his career ahead of him. And he's had better days. I didn't think he was personally that bad. I thought Raphael was a bit ropey as well and a little bit green behind the ears. But, I mean, they're young lads and they're on a learning curve. And, you know, I think the second half we picked up a fair bit as well. So I won't be too harsh on John Evans there, I don't think. But, yeah, he was a little bit shaky, no doubt about it.
Well, I'm sure he'll be fine in the second leg. But what's your favourite United moment then?
Oh, favourite United moment, what comes to mind? 84 Barcelona, beating them 3-0 at Old Trafford, Robson. Obviously winning the Champions League in 99, that was incredible. 50 years after Munich, winning the Champions League with the on penalties. That was pretty incredible, getting mobbed by a lot of United fans. Yeah, there's a couple off the top of my head. I think I'd probably go for Barcelona. That 2 minutes in Barcelona against Bayern Munich was just incredible, really.
I tend to agree with you.
just words. It's good beyond words, really. It really does.
Yeah. Well, like I say, you know, I agree with you. I mean, I remember watching that game and. It's just, I felt like crying when we scored the goals, but never mind. Anyway, what
I was just climbing the walls. I was just climbing the walls. I've never had a feeling like it, to be honest with you.
Well, I've got a Liverpool fan across the road from me, so that was a bit of banter going on there.
I bet he heard you from where you were.
He did, certainly did. Anyway, right, back to the quiz. After 5 weeks, Fergal, he's got a total of 8. So are you ready to give it a crack?
I'll give it a last. Make them nice and easy, please.
Hey, you know they're all random.
Okay.
Anyway, you've got 1 minute to answer as many questions as you can, and the clock starts. What colour shirt did United wear during the 1968 European Cup final?
Blue.
Spurs have faced United in 2 major cup finals. Is that true or false?
Can you repeat that?
Spurs have faced United in 2 major cup finals. Is that true or false?
2 major cup finals. True.
Against whom did Norman Whiteside become the youngest scorer in a Wembley final?
Everton.
Which winger joined Newcastle in the deal which saw Andy Cole sign for United?
Which winger?
So joined Newcastle in the Andy Cole deal.
In the Andy Cole deal, Gillespie.
Who gave away the penalty that gave Dennis Bergkamp the chance to wreck United's treble ambitions in 99?
I'd pass.
Who took over as United manager following Sir Matt Busby's second spell in charge at the club?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Who took over as United manager following Sir Matt Busby's second spell in charge of the club?
Wilfred Guinness.
Right. Well, did you hear? Could you hear us properly, or was it just?
It's a little bit fuzzy, but not too bad.
All right. Well, you answered seven questions. No, sorry, six questions.
Yeah.
And you got two correct, unfortunately.
Two.
Spurs. We've never played Spurs in a major cup final. That was false.
I thought we played. Didn't play them in the FA Cup in the '60s. No.
Not according to my book, anyway.
All right.
And the normal white side was Liverpool, so you got the Liverpool connection, but you said Everton. You got Keith Gillespie right. Dennis Bergkamp was the one who missed the penalty. Phil Neville would want to give it away.
Right.
And it was Franco Farrell who took over as United manager.
I got the blue shirt one right.
You got the blue one right and the Gillespie one right. So it's just unfortunate that you couldn't. I don't know if you could hear us or anything like that. But
Yeah, it wasn't too clear, but not to worry.
All right, well, never mind anyway. Thanks, like I say, for joining us, and hope United have a good season.
Yeah, okay, Danny, thanks a lot. All the best.
All right.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Well, it's loan watch time now on the redcafe.net podcast. We haven't had it for a good couple of months now, so it'd be good to check up on the United players that are currently out on loan and see how they're getting on. What we're going to do, we're going to split it into two parts. Next week will obviously be part two. But for this week, we're going to look at Danny Welbeck and Matty James at Preston and Daniel Drinkwater at Huddersfield Town. So, Preston, we'll start there. Darren Ferguson, obviously manager there, and he's asked his dad for a bit of help. He's asked to take Welbeck and Matty James on loan. And they've both done pretty well, to be fair. Welbeck, he joined at the end of January and has started each of Preston's last seven games. So he's getting a good run in the team. He scored two goals for them as well. His first came in the 2-0 win over Roy Keane's Ipswich, and that was his home debut as well, so getting off on the right foot there. And then immediately after that game, he scored, which would have been his third game for Preston. Yeah, he scored their only goal in the 4-1 defeat to Barnsley. Hasn't scored since then, so he'll be hoping he can start scoring again. But two goals from seven games isn't a bad run. But I think he'll have to probably improve on that if he wants to go back and sort of stake a claim for a first team place next season at United. We'll move on to Matty James again at Preston. He joined start of February and he started all three of Preston's games since he's been there, and he actually scored on his debut in the 2-1 win over Sheffield United, so he's doing pretty well as well. We'll quickly move on to look at Huddersfield Town, who have taken Danny Drinkwater on loan. The last loan watch, he wasn't really playing for them at the time, had been on the bench quite a few times, but more recently he's been heavily involved, and he's helped Huddersfield go on a pretty decent run actually since our last loan watch. Their last seven games that he's been involved in, they haven't lost, so he must be having some sort of impact. He was an unused substitute against Swindon, which was a 2-2 draw, and that was just this Saturday gone, but on Tuesday night, he did play the full 90 minutes, so he is back in the team when Huddersfield beat Carlisle 2-1. So he's getting lots of football there, and I reckon that could be a permanent deal, Drinkwater to Huddersfield. If he keeps performing well, they'll probably look to try and secure that permanently, and Ferguson will probably be happier for that to happen. And just finally, for this part of Loan Watch, Fabian Brandy. He was at Gillingham, but he's since returned to United. He played nine games for them in total and scored two goals. His final appearance coming for them on the 16th of January in what was a 3-1 defeat to Swindon. So not a great way to end his loan spell with Gillingham, but all in all, he did pretty well there, and he's now back with United. That's the first half of Loan Watch. It's not a very big Loan Watch anymore because we've only got, I think it's six players out on loan. But next week I'll be bringing you news of Zoran Tosic at Köln in the German Bundesliga, and he's been doing pretty well there, so some good news to bring about him. Tom Cleverley, he's at Watford, and you've probably heard a great deal about how well he's doing there. Mr. Mujak's talked at length about him in the past and how well he's developing. So good to catch up on how he's doing. And just finally, we'll be looking at Tom Heaton. He's on loan at Wycombe Wanderers, so stay tuned for that next week.
You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Right, well, let's move on to Cabbage and Player of the Week now then. Dan, just your vote to take this week. No Dov, of course. We'll start with the player of the week for you this week.
It's got to be Wayne Rooney, I think. He was blinding at the San Siro, and he took his chances very well. He only had probably three or four decent chances, but he took two of them away. So, yeah, Wayne Rooney, definitely. What about you, Steve? Who have you gone for?
Well, the obvious choice is Rooney, isn't it? Because he was superb in the San Siro. But I'm going to give it to Darren Fletcher. I thought he was magnificent as well as Rooney. Provided the two goals, and just generally his midfield play, I thought he was... His tenacity was superb, as it always is. And he's just a creative threat now. I mean, not long ago, we'd have probably said Fletcher, yeah, he's good at sort of getting in there, battling and winning everything, and more of a sort of Roy Keane role. But to be fair, there's a lot more to his game than just that. He can pick a pass. He's got a decent cross on him, as we saw in the San Siro, and he'll give 110% every week. So Fletcher, for me, this week. What about Cabbage of the Week, Dan? You?
I think I'd have to go with Michael Carrick. I thought he had a fairly good game, but that stupid decision to flip the ball away in the last minute, it could ultimately, you know, cost us. So yeah, I think Michael Carrick, just for that lapse of, you know, concentration or stupidity, whichever you want to call it.
Fair enough. Can't believe you haven't gone for Nani. That's going to be my cabbage.
Well, no, Nani, well, he didn't really have a good game, did he? But I mean, there's Johnny Evans as well. There's a few people you could pick, but so you're going with Nani then, are you?
Yeah, just for the stupidity involved in the sort of jumping into that tackle against Petrov. Like we said earlier, I could see he didn't mean it. He wasn't out to injure Petrov whatsoever, but it was just stupid. You don't jump in and lift your foot up in a challenge like that. I just can't see why he's done it. But anyway, not just that, San Siro performance as well. Absolutely average, wasn't he? I mean, Valencia came on. He was only on, 5-10 minutes and swings in the ball to set up the goal. So, yeah, disappointing from Nani. But I'm sure he'll bounce back. And I think Ferguson's got a bit more faith in him now anyway. So should get plenty more opportunities towards the end of the season. Right, well, it's Legends Profile time. And although Dov isn't here, he kindly recorded a Legends Profile before he headed off to Hong Kong. So, Dov, do tell us who you've got this week for your Legends Profile.
Well, Steve, this week, as the legend of Old Trafford, we have Edward Paul Sheringham, or to you and me, Teddy Sheringham. He was born on the 2nd of April 1966 in Hyams Park in London, and obviously we know where he played. He was a striker. He's also an MBE as well, and he was awarded this honour in June 2007. Unfortunately, he's retired at the age of 42, but we'll get into his age of retirement later on in this segment of the show. He began his professional career at Millwall. He joined them at the age of 16 in 1982. Impressed a scout while he was playing for non-league club Leytonstone in Ilford. He played against played for their youth team against Millwall's youth team, and was signed up as an apprentice for them. He scored his first goal and only second appearance for Millwall, but obviously didn't get much chance in the first team, just, you know, been signing for such a young age. He was then loaned to Aldershot, and also had a short spell in Sweden for Djurgårdens as well. Played 21 games for them, got 13 goals, so this was the start of a fruitful goal-scoring career. Then he went back to Millwall and was first-choice striker, and formed a fantastic partnership with Tony Cascarino, and was also the club's top goal scorer between the 86-87 season and the 1990-91 season. And he also played in every game of the season in 86-87 and 90-91. So obviously a fit lad. The 87-88 season saw Millwall promoted to the first division. And, well, obviously Sheringham was delighted getting Millwall to the high echelons of English football. But a transfer was on the horizon. At 25 years old, Nottingham Forest was a massive club. They came in, paid £2 million for Sheringham in 1991 in July to play him alongside Nigel Clough. The manager of Nottingham Forest at the time was Brian Clough, so obviously he's played under a few legends in his day. He helped Forest, they finished 8th at the end of the 1991-92 season, and also reached the League Cup final, where he lost to Manchester United, funnily enough. While he was at Nottingham Forest, his first Premiership goal came against Liverpool in August 1992, and incidentally, that was the first ever goal to be shown live on Sky Sports, although a week later, he was sold to Tottenham for £2.1 million. And also, it was probably a wise decision moving to Tottenham, because Forrest went on to get relegated in the 92-93 season as well. As a Tottenham player, obviously, Schenker was delighted to join them. He was a Tottenham fan as a boy and started off very well. He was the Premier League's top goal scorer in his first season with Spurs. He scored 22 goals, obviously one with Forrest, 21 with Tottenham. And obviously played with the likes of Ronnie Rosenthal, Jurgen Klinsmann and Chris Armstrong during his tenure, or his first tenure there. Jurgen Klinsmann, incidentally, he said that Sheringham was the most intelligent strike partner that he'd ever had, which is that's high praise indeed. Although at Tottenham, he didn't win anything. And his career up until the 96-97 season, he was 31, 15 years in football, hadn't won anything, and most people thought he's past his best and he wasn't going to finish with any trophies. But at Manchester United, Eric Cantona decided to retire and a replacement was needed, so Sir Alex Ferguson decided to shell out £3.5 million in June 97 to bring Sheringham to Old Trafford. And well, this is where probably the greatest chapter of his career began. Made his debut against Tottenham, incidentally, and missed a penalty in that game, although United did go on to win 2-0. Not really the best start for him. In his first season, though, he did get 14 goals in all competitions, but no trophy was to become at the end of that. But the season after, we know what season this is, 1998-1999. Dwight Yorker joined the club, obviously led to a lot of speculation with Sheringham, where he would be at the club, where he wouldn't be Andy Cole, where he would have suffered the same things. But Sheringham stayed at the club, and at the age of 33, won his first major trophy, which was obviously the league. And a week later, he scored one of the goals in the FA Cup final to get his second major honour. And then 4 days after that, he scored that stoppage time equaliser against Bayern Munich in the Champions League final in 1999 at the Nou Camp, which sent myself, Steve and Dan into raptures, and probably you listening as well. Then, still in stoppage time, corner came in from Beckham, Sheringham flicked the ball on for Ole Solskjaer to score the winning goal in the 1999 European Cup final. So that cemented his place as a legend at the club. So at 15 years, didn't win anything. In the space of about 2 weeks, won what the three main trophies that he could win in his career. The next season, he didn't get as many chances in the first team as he would want, although he did win another league. And in the season after, 2000-2001, Sheringham was phenomenal. And he was the top scorer at United. He'd ousted Dwight Yorke from the first team and won the English Player of the Year, the Players' Player of the Year, and the Football Writers' Player of the Year during that season. So that shows you how good he was. He then went back to Tottenham. His four-year contract at Old Trafford was up. He didn't get a new one. United signed Van Nistelrooy, and he went back to probably a club that he really has strong ties with. It led them back to a ninth place finish. That was the sort of highest finish for a long, long time. It was 6 years, I believe, and also got to the League Cup final with Spurs then as well, but he lost that, unfortunately. During his time at Tottenham, it was an important player for them, but again, contract expired, he wasn't offered a new one, and he subsequently went to join Portsmouth, played one season for them. Again, he played alright, he scored 10 goals in 30 games for them, so he wasn't too bad, so, although 38 years old at the time, might I add. Portsmouth didn't decide to renew his contract then either, and West Ham decided to take him off. No, they were playing in the Championship at the time, and then the season for West Ham in the Championship, he scored 20 goals and was awarded the Championship Player of the Season, where obviously he managed to help West Ham get back into the Premiership after they won the playoff final against Preston. This is where the sort of records for being old come into it. Obviously, getting back into the Premiership, he became the oldest outfield player to play on the 19th of August 2006 in the Premier League at 40 years and 139 days. He then signed an extension to his contract, and on the 13th of May 2006 became the third oldest player to play in an FA Cup final at 40 years and 41 days. On the 26th of December 2006, at the age of 40 years, 266 days, he beat his own record for becoming the oldest Premiership goal scorer. Then, a few days later, on the 30th of December 2006, he broke the record for the oldest Premiership outfield player again, where he played in a game against Manchester City. So there you go, it's him, quite the stalwart. Although after being released by West Ham in July 2007, he was picked up by Colchester United. While he was there, he became the oldest player in all four divisions of the Football League. And when it also during his time at Colchester managed to notch up enough league appearances to get in his career more than 700, and there's not many players that have done that. Although on a low note, we'll mention that utter under our breaths, Colchester were relegated from the Championship, the first relegation in 18 years. He then retired from playing football, so. As a long career for him, it didn't look like he was ever going to retire, but he did. And what a great career it was. His international career had a few notable moments. Probably the most famous moment was in a 4-1 victory over Holland in Euro 96, where the ball was played across to him. I think it was by Steve McManaman, sorry. And instead of taking the shot himself, he dummied it and left it for Alan Shearer, who smashed it into the top corner. And it was a lovely goal for him. And that sort of showed you the intelligence of the man as well. Even though he didn't have much pace, it was fantastic at holding up the ball, bringing other players into play. His intelligence on the park is something that he's renowned for. It's often said that because he didn't have much pace, he was always a yard ahead in his head of the defenders. His awareness and vision were brilliant. I also had a great touch and scored wonderful, wonderful goals. He was a scorer of great goals as well as many goals. Upon his retirement from the game, he's become quite a figure in the world poker scene. He's played at loads of events, and in one event in London in particular, he finished 14th out of 334 players. So that's not too bad if you can go from being a success on the football field to being a success on a poker table. Can't be bad at all. But I think most notably, Terry Sheringham will be remembered forever for the part he played in the 1999 European Cup final. He was absolutely instrumental, and he was a fantastic player, and rightly deserves to be called a legend.
Well, it's preview time on the redcafe.net podcast, and we've got two games coming up over the next week. On the weekend, we've got Everton away, which is the early kickoff on Saturday in the Premier League. Dan, it's going to be interesting to see if Fergie goes with a 4-5-1, I think. Berbatov, we mentioned earlier, might start getting a tad frustrated if he's left out again, will he not? I mean, Rooney, as we mentioned, he's playing so well, but do you think he's likely to stick with that 4-5-1 formation? Because he does like to do it, doesn't he, when he goes away from home against a decent side, and to be fair, Everton are just that.
Yeah, he probably will do, but I prefer to see 4-4-2 against Everton, like you said, to give Berbatov another chance up front with Rooney, because Rooney will most certainly start, obviously, against his old club. But I think that we should go there to attack. We're a better team than Everton, so I think we should look to, you know, provide the impetus and get a nice lead. Obviously, that would be all, you know, too easy to say, but obviously to go and do it. Everton are a decent team. They beat Sporting Lisbon last night, didn't they? Was it 2-1? I think they won. Sahar's in great form as well. But fortunately for us, and unfortunately for Everton, Fellaini's out for the rest of the season now. Which is a massive blow, because I think he's a really good player.
Go on then, Dan, what would be your prediction going to Goodison Park? Tough place to go. They beat Chelsea as well there recently, so certainly can't take anything for granted.
No, I mean, I think that I think we'll probably end up sneaking it. I wouldn't be too confident of getting a hatful of goals. But yet, saying that, I said that against AC Milan, I thought we'd just, you know, squeak it and end up scoring three goals. So it's very hard to predict these sort of games. It will be interesting to see how they do without Fellaini. Obviously, Arteta's back now, though. He's feeling his way back into the first team, isn't he, after that long injury. And Cahill's always a goal threat. And like I mentioned, Sahar as well. I mean, I wouldn't bet against him, you know, putting one away. But I think we'll sneak it a nice 2-1 victory. And, you know, push for the title. Because it's within our grasp now. I think if we play well for the rest of the season, I can see us getting more points than Chelsea. And I think, you know, it's something that we've got a target to aim for now.
And yeah, we've still got to play Chelsea at home as well, Dan. So you can say it really is in our hands. But we'll move on quickly to preview West Ham at home, which is next Tuesday in the Premier League. Dan, the Hammers, they're struggling this season, aren't they? All sorts of problems financially and on the pitch as well. They've not been doing too great, but got a victory against Birmingham in their last game, so they'll be fired up. But at Old Trafford, we should be really confident and we should really get the 3 points, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I'd expect that. Like you say, being at Old Trafford. I think, did the game get moved for the League Cup final? I think that's why it's played on Tuesday night. But, again, I think, depending upon the Everton result at the weekend, it depends how we start the game, what team we play, so it's quite hard to predict. But, I mean, I think that we should come away winners, like you say. They'll put up a good fight, but I think with them being away from home, I don't think they've won many games away from Upton Park this season. And Zoll's under a bit of pressure as well, so I think that I'd say that was a definite 3-pointer, but no doubt, you know, something will happen now and I'll be made to eat my words. I mean, what do you think, Steve? Do you think technically we could, you know, get a few goals, you know, increase the goal difference, but I mean it will be hard, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of time of the season where Ferguson would like to rest a few players, and a game at home against West Ham, he probably could do, but you can't take any chances now, can you, with Chelsea playing as well as they are. Arsenal as well are still there. I know they're a few points behind, but a couple of defeats and a couple of wins for Arsenal and they're straight back in it. So, I'd be happy with a convincing win by a couple of goals. And in terms of the Everton game, I'd be happy with a draw, to be honest, after what they did to Chelsea. And that'll be a point gained in terms of results against Everton. So, I'll take a draw against the Toffees. But that just is about it for episode 28 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Do stay tuned next week, though, because we'll have a Villa fan on to preview the League Cup final. We'll have the second part of Lone Watch as well. And the CAF countdown will resume as well. Remember, email us, podcast@redcafe.net, with any sort of questions, comments or feedback you might have regarding the show. And join us again next week.